Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the sports betting network. Coming up on the show, Dave Ross, VSiN by the books, will join us. We will go over PGA Championship, the Mets, let him vent a little bit, baseball. Excited to talk to Dave. I had Dave on, I remember it was 2 years ago, the Mets were playing terribly. It was Memorial Day weekend, and Dave came on that Sunday, and the Mets right around then really started to get hot, and that was the year they made it to the playoffs. Made it to, had the dramatic win over the Brewers, then beat the Phillies and came up short in the NLCS, but got to game six of the NLCS. And early in the year, they were a good 10 plus games under 500. So maybe throwing Dave a bone, doing Dave a solid here, seeing if we can get his Mets back on track. Maybe coming on this podcast will turn their luck around. I'm not so confident in it, but I haven't done a lot of baseball. It's been a lot of NBA, so excited to talk some baseball with Dave. I will do some NBA here to start a Game 5 on Wednesday. T-Wolves and Spurs going on as we speak. We'll deal with that down the road. Would expect the Spurs to win that series one way or another, but we'll kind of deal with that, you know, as it comes. But talked a little bit about this series, Pistons and Cavs, and boy, the NBA needs some of these series to go long. So I was talking about it on Monday. Man, Lakers swept, which I'll get to. Sixers swept. The finals doesn't start until June 3rd. So at some point here, you're going to have a gap or you're going to need some of these series to get extended. I told you when Detroit was up 2-0, I said, you know what? Once we get back to Cleveland, the series can look different. I still expect Cleveland in seven, picked Cleveland in seven before the series. Stuck with Cleveland in seven when it was 2-0 and you could have gotten 6-1. I still feel good about it. Why wouldn't I? It's 2-2, and all we need is these teams to continue what they've done is win at home, which is win at home. And Cleveland throughout the whole postseason, 6-0 at home, 0-5 on the road. There's only been a couple teams in history this deep into the playoffs that have kept up this pace, this this streak of being undefeated at home but winless on the road. And look, they're going to need to win on the road at some point here. I'm hoping it's not in game five. I want it to just be Detroit holds serve, wins game five, Cleveland holds serves game six, and then Cleveland breaks through and wins game seven. And honestly, at 6-1, if you just get to a game seven, you can kind of play around and name your profit because these lines have all been pretty tight, pretty low. You know, 3, 3.5, 4, if you got to a game seven, probably Detroit by 3, something like that. The total usually drops, which means the point spread usually drops a tick. So hopefully we'll deal with that when it gets there. I think we'll be back on track with this. I know Detroit was whining about the officials and say, hey, one player for them shot more free throws than our entire team, which I get looks bad. But watching that game, I did not think the free throws were really an issue. I just don't think Detroit's that good. And yes, they have the best player in the series in Cunningham, who looks like he's getting tired. He's getting worn down. And they've got home court, so that's enough to make them still a minus 140 series favorite. Cavs are plus 120. But the Cavs, to me, have better players. Not by a lot, but still slightly better players. So if I'm concerned about one thing, am I more concerned about Cleveland winning game five or Detroit winning game six and my bet getting screwed up that way? I'm more concerned Cleveland wins game five. I'll still pick Detroit. I still think we go seven and Detroit wins at home in game five. Cleveland wins at home in game six. And then who knows, game seven's a toss-up. But I'm more concerned. I'm a little bit concerned Cleveland wins this game for whatever reason. Now, again, like I said, when we headed back to Cleveland, these series can look different when you flip venues. Detroit won the first two games somewhat comfortably, but similar to Detroit in game three against Cleveland, Detroit had a lead pretty late in the fourth quarter in game three, even though that game landed on seven. Cleveland had leads, or had a lead at least in with a few minutes to go in game two. They had leads in game one. The series has just been what you kind of expect, where the teams are pretty even and the home team wins. It's not necessarily easy. Even in game four, I mean, the Cavs are down 4 at half, and I'm starting to think, uh-oh, Pistons are going to break through. The Cavs just went absolutely nuclear to start the third quarter. It was almost a UConn-Illinois-esque run, 24-0 that UConn-Illinois run back in the Elite Eight a couple years ago was 30-0. Mitchell, only 4 points at the half. He ends with, 39 in the second half alone to get to 43. I think he missed a free throw that would have given him 40 second-half points and been a record. Just incredible, incredible performance from Mitchell. Harden wasn't bad, at least in the first half. He was pretty good, got to the line. Detroit's just not that good, but I would expect them to win at home. If anything here, I would bet, I do like the under 212.5. Game five can often be a proxy for game seven. Hey, it's 2-2. Whoever wins game five, you're going to see the stat. When the series is tied 2-2, whoever wins game five wins, whatever, 80% of the time in the series, which makes sense. It's a best 2 out of 3 if you're going to win one out of the first three. In a best 2 out of 3, when you're going to win basically what is now a best 2 out of 3, you're going to win game one. you're going to win a high percentage, 75%, 80%+. So game sevens usually trend under. Game fives usually trend under, too, when it's 2-2. I would expect, you know, closer to the vest, pace slows down. Detroit probably gets a little bit better of a whistle at home. Again, I didn't think they got a terrible whistle in game four. But hoping this holds where Detroit wins, then Cleveland wins, then we get a seven-gamer. And the Knicks have to be loving this. The Knicks can just put their feet up, let Anunoby rest, let some of these bumps and bruises heal, and let these guys battle to the death. And whoever they face, let's just say this goes seven. Remember, both these teams played seven games in the first round. So whoever they get is going to be on fumes. And Detroit already looks a little bit gassed. Knicks can put their feet up, rest, wait for the winner. I do think the Knicks are going to beat whoever comes out of this. If you're Detroit, if you play Detroit, you're playing the lesser team. If you play Cleveland, all right, Cleveland's maybe a little bit better, but the Knicks would get home court against Cleveland. They would not get home court against Detroit. So who are they rooting for? I guess teams are usually probably rooting to just get game one in their building. I think the Knicks would probably prefer to have game one in their building. Not by feet, not by miles. I don't think it's by much, but I think you'd rather have game one at home, even if you're playing the slightly more talented team in Cleveland. But I'm sure they're not worried about whoever they're going to face. They're going to be favored, a slight favorite, especially if it's Detroit. They're not going to be a huge favorite over Detroit, considering home court. But with the way the Knicks have played, and you figure this time buys a little Anunoby, who's extremely important for them. This buys Anunoby a little time, and they could be in good shape whenever that Eastern Conference Finals begins. The Lakers, to get swept, got home on Monday. And by the way, can we start these games at a reasonable hour? I know a lot of the country's on the West Coast. I know, hey, you live in the East Coast. Not everything revolves around you. I heard people say that. The NFL is the most popular sport because people can watch and access their sport. And I know it's fewer games, fewer playoff games. The game ended. Game ended 2 o'clock in the morning there, about Monday night into Tuesday morning. I mean, do we have to start the game 11 o'clock on the East Coast? The fourth quarter didn't get started till damn near 1 o'clock in the morning. I mean, what are we doing? You gotta play. It's gotta be a little bit more of a compromise. You're just not doing your sport any good to bury it. Now, luckily, and it ended up being a really good game. Lakers were down 10, down double digits. They rallied, which, down 3-0, down double digits, you figured it was over. LeBron played pretty well. OKC pulls away again. It looked for a few different times OKC was going to pull away. OKC's up 6 with like a couple minutes left, maybe under that. Lakers get a 4-point play and then a 3-point play. Next thing you know, they're leading, but OKC scored and answered every time they needed to, ended up winning by 5, and they get the sweep. The Lakers were very game in terms of it being a sweep, in terms of what they had and how limited they were and how outmatched they were. They played pretty hard and pretty well, all things considered, but Lakers to get swept was plus money. I didn't understand that, and that one gets home, even though the Lakers, in a very quick series here, had their moments. We're leading in a lot of these games. We're competitive as you could hope. Redick's a good coach, but man, he does not get enough heat for the fact that Luka being hurt, and he got hurt against the Thunder late in the season. They're down 30. Luka tweaks a hamstring, and Redick puts him back in the game and says, the medical team told me he was okay, so I put him back in. If there's any concern about your best player, as somebody as important as Luka, a completely meaningless regular season game, why you're throwing him back in there in that type of scenario is beyond me. I don't think he gets enough crap for that. He's a good coach. He gets the guys to play hard. He's hard on the guys. I like him as a coach, but that is an inexcusable decision, borderline malpractice to put Luka back in. And they weren't winning the series anyway, but with Luka, could you have gotten to a sixth game? Maybe he goes absolutely nuclear and you get to a seventh game. I know if you're OKC, you say, we didn't have Jalen Williams, our second best player, and we still swept you. So OKC was going to win the series no matter what. But Luka not being in the mix here obviously hurt the competitiveness of that. We'll see if it's the last game as a Laker for LeBron. It's certainly possible. Would he go back to Cleveland? Would he join the Warriors? Would he team up with Durant, who might be traded again? Nobody can seem to stand Durant for more than, 10 minutes before they want him out the door. He is always wearing out his welcome very quickly. Would LeBron and Durant both go to Golden State? I mean, you've heard that rumored. I don't know. I think it's 50-50 whether he comes back. He seems to like living in L.A. It's hard to believe he's played there for 8 years. He's won a championship, so these people saying, his tenure, if he leaves now, his tenure is a failure. His tenure's not a failure. The Lakers were a joke, a complete laughing stock when LeBron arrived, decided to sign there July of 2018. They missed the playoffs the first year. They were playing well. He got hurt on Christmas. They win the title the second year. I don't care. It's the bubble. They won the title. All the teams were in the bubble. They won it. Nobody else did. And they beat, who they had to beat. And they beat, right before the pandemic, they beat Milwaukee and the Clippers back-to-back. Those were the two best teams that year. And after that, they kind of lost their mind. They traded for Westbrook. Davis got hurt in the following postseason. They probably could have. You could argue should have won another one with how good LeBron and Davis were at their age. You probably should have won one more. You could have gotten a second one if you managed it properly. The trade for Westbrook where you gave up Pope and Kuzma and draft picks, that was, you cashed in way too many chips for a guy who was completely just a bad fit, a losing player. You know, speaking of guys that wear out their welcome, that's where things got off track. Eventually, they had to move picks and attach picks to dump Westbrook, and they got to a conference finals and got swept by Denver, another series where they got swept, but that was actually a pretty competitive game in, game out. They probably could have won, you know, a few of those games, let games one and two get away, and then the series just got away from them. But you can't call the LeBron tenure a failure. You won a championship. They had no prayer of winning a championship before LeBron got there. They were picking second pretty much every year. Their core, which a lot of it they traded for Davis eventually, but their core when LeBron got there was D'Angelo Russell, Lonzo Ball, Randall, and Ingram. I mean, that team's not winning a championship. That team's not doing anything. So LeBron only got him one, but hey, he got him one. People just like to knock LeBron, and I get it. People get sick of him, but he won him a championship. You would have liked more if you're the Lakers, but you can't call it a failure. We'll see where he lands. We'll see where Giannis lands. I know there's rumors now. You know, the Clippers would be in the mix. And by the way, Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, is so gutless. The fact that the Clippers haven't been punished for the Kawhi stuff, you don't have to be, you know, Columbo to realize the Clippers did something wrong getting Kawhi and circumvented the cap, all that stuff. And they faced no punishment. Kawhi plays. They don't lose any draft picks. They're picking fifth. And we'll see here. I mean, and how long, by the way, do you need this investigation? It's been going on a year. How long do you need to realize they did something wrong? It's ridiculous. But there's talks now the Clippers could use the fifth pick to get Giannis. You know what? If you're the Bucks, that's not a great return. The fifth pick, and who knows, probably some filler, some future picks. I don't know what else you're going to get. I mean, he's obviously a tremendous player. He's only got 1 year left on his deal. That's a factor. He's hurt a lot. He's older. He doesn't have a great jump shot. And he can kind of dictate where he wants to go, where he doesn't want to go. So you throw in the fifth pick, a couple other things. Is that a starting point if you're Milwaukee? It's not a great. You're not going to get one of these godfather returns, I wouldn't think, where you get 4 or 5 great picks, young players. And, you know, it's crazy because Desmond Bane, who's an okay player, he's a decent player, but not, I mean, nowhere near Giannis. He went for, what, 4 picks? A lot of these guys, Gobert went for 1 million picks, but these trades, for the most part, I know Minnesota, you know, is still playing, so as bad as that trade seemed at the time, that was not it's not a trade that completely blew up in their face, but a lot of these trades do blow up in these teams' face. But would the Clippers do that again and go down that road and say, hey, we'll give you the fifth pick and other stuff and we'll get Giannis? Then you have Giannis and Kawhi. How many games do those guys play together? But if you get both those guys on the court, that's obviously, you know, a tremendous scenario. So it should be a pretty interesting NBA offseason. The game 5 here, though, on a Wednesday night should be a lot of fun here. We'll see what we get. Pistons, Cavs, hoping it goes 7. That's the bet. Cavs in 7. Talked about it when it was plus 600, plus 475. That is still on pace here to be live. Hopefully the Cavs don't pull the upset. Just kind of root for Detroit in game 5, root for Cleveland in game 6. And then, hey, we get to a game 7 and you could either let it ride. You could take Detroit before the game on the money line. You could hope Cleveland gets a lead and you could take Detroit plus the points. There's a lot of different ways to play it. So hopefully we get a game 7. I think we will. I don't really trust the Pistons, but again, that's probably prisoner of the moment where you just watch Detroit get stomped and you say, oh, they're going to lose again. These series, as I always say, have a tendency to look different when you switch the venues, and I think these teams are even enough where home court holds up. I am concerned, though, like I said, Cleveland, I think, is a little bit better, and you just wonder at some point, and due is a dangerous word, as we know, in betting. At some point, this trend is due to break of Cleveland. They just win every home game and lose every road game. At some point here, they've been close in enough of these road games. They've had leads late in some of these road games and vice versa. At some point, this trend is going to be broken, which makes me nervous. But hey, hopefully it holds up for a couple more games. And then it can get broken in game 7 and cash a nice 6-1 ticket and kind of go from there. So NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, obviously in full swing here. We get the PGA Championship, but let's do a little baseball. Let's do a little golf here. Dave Ross always has golf bets. I'm sure he has thoughts on his Mets. We'll try not to let him talk too much Cowboys, but there's only so much I can do to stop him. We'll see what he has to say. That is next. This should have been more podcast. All right, should have been more podcast. We are back, and he is back. He's our buddy. VSiN by the books. Dave Ross joins us. Dave, I appreciate you coming on. Before we get going, I have a little history lesson to you, and I want to give you a little reminder. Your first appearance on this podcast, May 26, 2024,
Whoa.
The Mets were 20-31. They won that day on a Sunday afternoon against the Giants. They lost a few more games against the Dodgers a few days later. But after that, got red hot, went all the way to the NLCS and two games away from the World Series. Will this podcast turn around the Mets season like that one did? And how are you? Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, of course it's going to turn it around, Will. You know that. I know that. The American people know that, right? Here's the difference between now and then. We had a line. We didn't have any pitching back then. Remember, they had no pitching. And then David Peterson turned in a revelation, made him a starter from being a stretch guy. Right. And then all of a sudden, Shawn Manaea, you know, it becomes the second coming of, I don't know, maybe Jerry Kuzman from back in the day. Pick your lefty du jour. And all of a sudden, the pitching started to match a really good lineup back in the day with the Nemos and the Alonzos and the Starling Martes of the world, the guys that could lengthen out that lineup to go with Francisco Lindor at the top. A lot of those guys aren't here anymore. They're gone. And we're filling those guys up now with A.J. Ewing, 21-year-old kid who's coming in here from the AAAs, and we'll find out what he's made of, if he's ready, sink or swim time. We're trying to do this now with Marcus Semien, who just can't, you know, maybe he's going to start turning the corner a little bit. I have no idea. Soto's not hitting. Bichette's not hitting. Lindor's injured. We don't know when he's coming back. I love to be optimistic and go glass half full. And that year, as you well know, I bet the Mets at 125-1 to win the World Series that June. You're not even getting those numbers now. And I'm like, are you looking at it? It should be 200-1 with the team the way it's currently constructed versus the team that got hot 2 years ago. Look, the pitching is better on this version of the Mets than that version that got two games from the World Series, right? But until they get a lineup, Will, that remotely resembles a major league lineup, they got no shot. So we'll find out if we're going to go to the kids. Are they going to make a move? You know, we're hearing rumors of dealing Freddie Peralta. Like, we just gave up the farm to get him, literally gave up the farm to the Brewers to go get him. And now we're going to dump him before the trade deadline. What is David Stearns doing? How many mistakes as a GM can you make before you lose your job? I'm not calling for anybody to lose their job. I'm just asking the question rhetorically. What do you have to do to lose it? Because this is a pretty bad sign if this is what management and David Stearns is thinking about.
If Mets owner Steve Cohen came in and hired you as a consultant for a day and said, hey, here's your magic wand. You have carte blanche. You do whatever you want. What would you do? Would it be status quo and you waited out? Would you say, Stearns, hey, appreciate it, but we're going to go somewhere else? Like, what would be the two or three things to do? Like, where would you start here? Where's the problem and how would you fix it?
We can look at Mendy all we want and say, well, it's change Mendoza, switch out the manager. Until at the front office, how much say did Mendoza have in the offseason? That's going to be my first question to David Stearns. Was this you? Was this in collaboration? How much of this is Mendoza? How much of this is you? Because as much as I can fault Mendoza for some things that have happened in games, that I think we could do that with every manager and go back, man, you cost us a game here. You should have challenged here. There are things you can literally point at that have cost games from the managerial side. But the bigger problem is the front office. So my first question and interview is going to be with David Stearns. We're going to have frank conversations. Hey, I get it. Sometimes things don't work out the way you planned, but what was your plan? You tell me what your plan was, and then I can see if I can go with that. And if it's not sound in my estimation, and I hope Steve Cohen does give me a call, then we're going to make some changes at the top, and we're going to go with tough love. Because you know me, man, patience is starting to run out pretty thin with the way this club is run. And not saying I could do a better job, because I wouldn't be that naive, but I would say if you gave me the keys to the kingdom and let me poke around a little bit, I bet you we can make some educated decisions.
Is there anybody you have your eye on, manager, GM, that you say, you know what, I really wish we had this guy instead?
You know, I still go back and I go, well, how much of the, you know, Houston, trash can gate, if you will, still lingers? Because if that stuff is all gone, what about Carlos Beltran? I mean, he was going to be the hire. And I got to be honest with you, the day they made the hire, I was so intrigued by it. At that point, you know, right off of a potential Hall of Fame playing career, right? Still knows the players, knows the game intimately. What's it been? 5-6 years now since then? If the penance has been paid, Will, then I'm going to say, why not? Let's run that back and see if there's something there. Because I thought at the time it was the right guy until we had the controversy come out.
Wasn't that pre-COVID? Wasn't that like a couple weeks in 2019 that he was? Man, it's hard to believe that 7 years ago. I know I say that all the time, but man,
it's crazy.
It really is. Sounds like you're not intrigued by any of these numbers. Plus 425 to make the playoffs, 30-1 to win the National League, 55-1 to win the whole damn thing. You're not biting on any of that.
Give me a respectable number, Will, and I'll be a glutton for punishment. You give me triple digits and you hang that out there like meat to a bear, then yeah, I might run out there and tempt my tummy a little bit and take a nibble. Not a 55-1. They don't have the worst record in the National League East. They have the worst record in Major League Baseball. I'm talking about the Rockies. I'm talking about the White Sox. Take your crappy team du jour, and the Mets are worse, and you want me in May, year of our Lord 2026, to buy on 55-1? I'm stupid. I'm not that stupid, sportsbooks. I am not picking up what you're putting down.
Eight back of a playoff spot. Eight's a lot. Eight's not nothing. But I mean, it's almost like, you know, kind of like a golf tournament where it's not just, hey, you're eight strokes behind the leader. You got a bunch of teams, you got a bunch of players between you and the leader. I mean, I don't know. Cardinals right now have the final spot, though. You figure they're not going to hold up. The Pirates have 19 losses. You have 25. You're six behind them. I mean, I got to think, and I'm not really optimistic about this team. I think that obviously they have some flaws. You got to figure a 13 out of 16 run is coming at some point, or is that not realistic at this point?
You know, it's interesting because I was looking, you know, as I say, being a glutton for punishment, at trying to go glass half full and looking what the lineup could look like when you get a Lindor back, when you get a Luis Robert back. To lengthen out the lineup again with Bichette and Soto. We'll find out about A.J. Ewing. We'll see if Marcus Semien at the bottom lineup can turn the corner and start to hit. Carson Benz looks like he might actually be a nice piece here going down the road. Mark Vientos, you know, I always kid with you, Mark Vientos will lead us and lead the revolution. A couple weeks ago, that was the best option we had in the middle of the lineup, and that was a guy that was not even going to have a roster spot in the offseason. So that's how far they've fallen, but it's so many ifs. And by the way, if you guaranteed me good health, if you could do that, then I might take a nibble, but you can't. And I don't know when these guys are coming back. I don't know when Robert's coming back. I don't know when Frankie is coming back. So, you know, there's a lot of ifs. And by the All-Star break, is it too late for those guys? I mean, we're already in middle of May. Before you know, it's going to be July. And if you're still, you know, fumbling around six, seven games back of a wild card spot, you're going to run out sand of the hourglass at some point here, Will. So I would like to think that run is coming, but I just don't know with what. Here's what I will say, glass half full. The pitching, as I mentioned, it really is good, right? And Peralta right now has been their third best starter. So when you look at what Clay Holmes has been doing, he's fantastic. We know about Nolan McClain and Peralta right there. I wouldn't deal anybody right now. I'd stand pat. And again, if you're David Stearns, and is the A.J. Ewing pushing the panic button? When you're bringing up a kid who has limited time in AAA, and now you're going to throw him into the big leagues, and I think that you're pushing a button. And if it's not the panic button, I want to know what the other button is, because it does feel like a move that we're doing out of desperation and out of necessity. I understand this move. I'm not mad at David Stearns for it, but you're making this move because the other moves you made in the offseason, i.e. Polanco, have not worked out. Injuries are one thing, but when you are going to get technically and traditionally injured players like a Robert and a Polanco, Polanco's already missed more games in 1 year than Pete Alonso missed in 7 years. Your best ability is availability. Right now, most of the Mets are not available.
All right, the rest of baseball. Right now in the American League, as we're recording this, in first place, as we all expected, the Rays, the A's, and the Cleveland Guardians. Cleveland's 22-21. A's are two games over 500 at 21-19. You got the Yankees in second place now, 10 games over. Everybody else is under 500. Right now, the final wildcard spots would be Seattle, who's two games under, and the Chicago White Sox, who are two games under. This is really bizarre. I mean, you had this Blue Jays ticket. I know you got it later in the year last year.
Yep.
But, like, you got to figure somebody's going to emerge. Somebody we're not looking at right now or not suspecting. Even if you think the Yankees are the most dominant team in the American League, somebody by, you know, process of elimination, somebody has to play them in the playoffs in the ALCS. Does Texas emerge? I know a lot of people like Kansas City. Tigers, maybe they get school back. I thought Baltimore would be better. They've had a million injuries. Toronto is five games under as we're recording this. Boston, six games under. None of these teams are good, but none of these teams are out of it. Do you have a thought here, American League, you know, who might emerge here and what is a really weird standings when you look at it?
Yeah, you nailed it. You mentioned it in that foray of teams. It is Kansas City. I love the Royals. I absolutely think they have underperformed. Remember, there was a stretch a couple weeks ago where they were the worst team in Major League Baseball, worse than the Mets by a game. They've come out of that slumber rather quickly. And I talk about the 2 years ago Mets in the middle of the lineup like a Starling Marte. Where is he playing now? Kansas City. And I do think, look, they've got some holes, but not a ton of holes in the lineup. And they're starting to hit a little bit more. Salvy Perez hasn't hit at all. And I think eventually, you know, the name in the back of the bubblegum card, we know that I think at some point he's going to get you big hits. He's still a guy that I would trust long-term here with Jack Kags in there. And certainly Vinny playing first base. I like what they've got in Michael Garcia at the top of the lineup. Then you got Bobby Witt, who's the MVP candidate at about 5-1 as of this conversation today. So they have some length. And even the guys at the bottom of the lineup have been producing a little bit too. So I look at this team and I go, I love the pitching. We got to see about Cole Reagans because, again, that is supposed to be the ace of aces. They got Noah Cameron back the other day. Didn't pitch well in his return from his injury. But, boy, Michael Wacha. Michael is just turning back the hands of time a little bit. Seth Lugo, the same thing. The bullpen, I think, has been corrected from some early problems when they lost Esteban early in the year here to injury. So I start to look at this, Will, and I go, I think they have the arms to battle when they go through offensive slumps. Plus, I think they're going to hit more as the weather heats up here. They move those fences in Kansas City. If you're giving me a long shot right now, I did play them at plus 320 to win the division. I like that price a lot, and I do think they might be right there at the end of the day in the American League.
The World Series in October is who?
Okay, let's go wild card, and I'll stick with my Kansas City Royals to come out of the American League, beating the Yankees like it's the 1970s all over again. George Brett, Pine Tar. We're finally going to get our revenge on that series. I'm going to go with the Royals as a wild card candidate because I don't trust anybody else really in the American League, as you mentioned, the Central and the West. I don't know that there's anybody there that really scares me. The Yankees are the best team. And Tampa Bay, this is a nice run. But in a short series or a seven-game series, I'll look at Kansas City as my real wild card there. And in the National League, I'd like to buy in on the Padres a little bit. They haven't hit at all yet. And I don't know, you can make the correlation when you look at post-PED to what we're seeing now out there. And I just go, I don't know if they're going to start hitting. And Manny Machado's not hitting at all. So if those guys at the top of that lineup start to produce like they used to produce and they have the pitching, watch out for San Diego. I think they're going to be really tough. Look, they have to win the division. I'd rather play San Diego at 11-1, if you can find that out there, versus, say, 18-1 to win the National League, because I don't think they can win the National League pennant unless they win the division. The Dodgers, I don't think it matters, but we saw what happened with San Diego last year when they went out to Chicago in the wild card round, and they just couldn't hit. Their hitting still worries me a little bit to win three series, but can they win two, especially if they're, say, potentially a number one or number two seed? Give me San Diego as a wild card. I'll take a complete mishmash World Series with San Diego and Kansas City.
You will be inducted into the Shoulda Bet More Hall of Fame if this gets home. A 319-1 matchup, Royals versus Padres. We don't have an official Hall of Fame yet. I would say one of the better calls I can think top of my head, I always text him about this. Kev O'Neill of the Odds Breakers came on, not this previous year, but the first year of Cignetti with Indiana, and said, watch out for them to make the playoffs, to win the Big Ten, to win it all. I think like 500, 1,000-1, and they made the playoffs, and the Big Ten one got close, and then the year later they popped. And I was like, man, that's about as good a call as you're going to hear. But man, 319-1, you won't even have to wait the 5 years. You'll get right into the Hall of Fame. Before we get into golf, do you have any other baseball thoughts, any other, you know, awards, win totals, anything, or you want to just move on to the PGA?
I do have Pirate and A's tickets, and I'm really happy with those positions. I haven't rebought yet on any of those, but I did rebuy again on the Royals at 79. Their posted win total got adjusted at 79.5. I think if you can get that anywhere around that number, I'd look to them to make a push. And also remember this, people, if you're listening and watching here, we don't know about next year, right? We don't know about the pending lockout. And I know for people like you and me, and certainly Jensen Lewis, it's something we've kind of been putting on the back burner. But why I bring that up is I think teams know that the financial landscape is going to change one way or the other, and probably negatively. So they might push some chips in here if there is not the specter of baseball next year, or at least an abbreviated season. That means teams like Kansas City, like Pittsburgh, and like the nomadic A's, wherever city they play in this year, that they might push some chips in now while they feel like they've got an opportunity. So I look for some of the smaller market teams to be a little bit more active, including the Fightin' Fish down there in Miami, I saw about 10-1 to make the postseason. I think it's a pretty good number for a team only three games under 500. I actually think they've underperformed so far this year, Will. Those are the type of teams I'd be looking to make plays on now with the idea that they might buy when traditionally they sell.
All right. I mean, if we're just going to be giving out 319-1 World Series, you mentioned the A's and the Pirates, 519-1 to reach in the World Series.
I mean, the Pirates have pitching. Happen. They got pitching.
They do. And the A's, they can hit. They supposedly have some pitching coming in the pipeline with some of these prospects. But let's move on. PGA. I guess we'll start. Scheffler's plus 385 at DraftKings. He's 5-1 at Circa. What number do you need to bite on Scheffler? I've seen people that I respect, our buddy the Bear, Chris Felica, has started to build some of these cross-sport parlays. I don't know how much you get involved with them, where it's like you throw in OKC to win the title, the Avalanche to win the Cup, and then you throw in Scheffler and you get up to 20-25-1 in that range. I don't know. Give me your thoughts, big picture, with this tournament, Scheffler, whatever direction you want to take it.
I do like that idea, and that is kind of a Jensen Lewis special. He loves to do that. And I did this last year, you might recall, Will, where I took the Reds to make the postseason and parlayed that with Scottie Scheffler to win the, we call it the British Open, they call it the Open. And I got that north of 44-1, about 45-1. And that was a really nice ticket when the Mets imploded late. So there was a little bit of blood money that I got out of that with the Reds making in the last day of the regular season. So I would look to that. Here's the deal, though, with Scotty. I'm not going to play him in the short number at 4-1, 5-1. What I like to do is he, for whatever reason, has not played well on day ones of any tournament that he's been in, let alone a major. And so what I look for is hope for is the Scottie Scheffler Thursday fizzle, if you will. And even if you readjust a little bit to 8-1, 9-1, that's when my interest starts to get peaked. So look, I do have a rule on VSiN by the book, shameless plug, 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern, wherever you get your, wherever you watch your shows. And what I say is 10-1 is an autoplay. If he hits 10-1, pretty much at any point in the tournament, I'm going to take a nibble on Scottie Scheffler, because what we've seen is even if he doesn't win, he finishes second. He's finished second, I think, in the last three tournaments he's played in after terrible starts. So that's the way I play Scottie. Hey, he goes wire to wire, tip of the cap, and I move on to the next tournament. But I'm not going to play the short numbers on Scottie. I think the PGA Championship this week at Aronimink outside of Philadelphia is going to be wide open. I like some longer numbers on the board here, starting in the 20s. And I'm just not going to play those short shots right now and see if I can come back to those golfers after day one or two.
Some of the books you and I frequent, not necessarily DraftKings or FanDuel, has Scheffler, a pretty short number, top 10, minus 160, I believe, where the market's 175, 180. I'll text you about that as a little reminder. Another one that's interesting, and the Bear Chris Felica mentioned this to me too, and he's been all over the golf here, under 260, 8.5 winning score. I want to make sure I get the number right. With the idea that, you know what, somebody probably, under 267.5 DraftKings plus money, with the idea that somebody's going to shoot 13 under. And he said the last time BMW PGA was there a couple years ago, it was minus 20. The course has lengthened since then, but minus 13 still pretty attainable. What do you expect from this course, the weather? Does somebody get to minus 13 or better here, you think?
Absolutely. I love that play. And I will bet that, because I think after talking to Rex Hoggard from the Golf Channel, had him on our program on Tuesday, and I asked, here's what I like to do, Will. You know me, I like to do the golf props for the round scores. And if, somebody say over under sitting at 69.5, whether it's Rory or Scotty or a big gun like that, I'm going to look to play that once I know the conditions. And Rex told me and Jensen that he thought initially 12, 13 might be the winning score. And then the more he's rethought, he thinks it might be 17, 18. These guys are going to go low. They've had rain this week here at Aronimink. That softens up those greens. There's not going to be a whole lot of defense, and they're supposed to get more rain on Thursday. So yeah, it's long, but the length isn't going to be a problem for these guys. If they know that they've got soft greens that they're firing in, they start going target practice. So yeah, PGA, they can switch it up a little bit and try to make the pins a little bit tougher to get to, but they probably won't do that until later on, maybe on Saturday, if they really feel like the scores are getting out of control. I've heard by people I trust that work at Golf Channel and know golf like the back of their hands, they're looking for somebody to shoot a 61 out there and possibly break the major championship record. So, Will, I'll be looking to unders, and I absolutely, if 13 is the number, I think it's going to be lower, if you will, 14, 15, 16, 17. I would absolutely play that prop. I'd be surprised if the winning score is 12 or lower.
Who you got for sleepers? I've heard, I think we had, who is it? I forget who we had on Monday night. These shows kind of blend together. Somebody brought up Russell Henley as a good match for the course. You're not buying it. Do you have any sleepers, first round leaders? I'll give you the floor here again. Anything else you want to throw out there?
I will eat my words, Matt Eumanns. I'm not on his guy this week. And look, I love Russell Henley. And that's somebody that Matt is on. He got a great number on him. But, you know, again, talking to Rex Hoggard and the ball flight of a guy like Russell Henley's kind of low. This is one of those golf courses where you really want to bomb it. You really, length is going to be an advantage. Pretty wide fairways out there. You know, I love to bet him. And this guy cashes tickets for me every week. And yet he has not won so far this year.
Ludwig not Tiger. Over. Please don't say Tiger. No, I'm kidding.
Ludwig, the big Swede, baby. Oh,
okay.
24-1 at some books, if you can find those. Even 20-1, I think it's playable on Ludwig. I really like his chances on a big ball course like this. You know, again, as Rex said, he's got, if you took Adam Scott's swing and said that's the most beautiful swing that we've seen in the last 20 years, well, he's passing the baton on to Ludwig Åberg. There's nothing in his swing and nothing in his putting stroke that says it shouldn't match up really well. I don't know if he'll win, but I think he's going to be right there. I'd be surprised if he's not 14, 15 under. Again, don't know if that's going to be good enough to win, but I love Ludwig at 24-1. I played Brooks Koepka at 42-1. Oh, by the way, he's only won the PGA Championship, well, not once, not twice, but thrice, trying to go for a fourth Wanamaker. His game is in really good shape coming into this tournament. Played the off event last week down there where Brent Snedeker won. Played really well this week. I think Brooks is primed in a really good headspace to play really well. And also played J.J. Spaun at about 68-1 for a longer number out there. And the reason why I like J.J. is if you watched him last week, his game is really in shape. He is sneaky long out there, and he thrives in majors now. And I heard JJ say that he was surprised that he gets criticized when he doesn't play well. And he said he takes that as a badge of honor because they used to only talk about it when he played well and he was a surprise contender. Now they talk about it when he plays well and when he doesn't play well. And that means he's a made man like a Sopranos character, that he knows the expectations are now higher for JJ Spaun. He likes that. I think he's looking forward to getting in the fight this weekend. And I think JJ's toughness is a good place in Philadelphia. Their sports fans love that. One other guy that I played at a price number, a LIV golfer, not named Bryson DeChambeau, not named John Rahm. It's Jocko, Joaquin Niemann. I played him at 90-1, the Chilean golfer. And Will, you want to talk about a golf swing, a guy who's got length, who has everything. And sometimes I just worry about this between the ears with a guy as talented as Joaquin Niemann is. Again, arguably one of the best golfers on LIV Golf in the last 3 years. I think that it's finally going to click. It's not clicked at majors for Niemann. Didn't qualify for the Masters because of the quirky rules that they have. But tell me that this guy isn't one of the best 60 players in the world. And I would challenge you to find 59 better. At 90-1, you won't get that number again, especially if he has a big week this week. I like him in placement markets as well.
How excited do you get for the NFL schedule? What do you look for in the NFL schedule? Boy, it seems like we got a million international games this year. Do you get into it? Do you care? Do you look for betting opportunities? What were you out here with football?
I mean, I get into it because I'm excited as a fan. But I would say this. Yes, I'm going to bet some of these games right away if I feel like we have an advantage here. But it is May. So we have to also know, like, the frameworks of these teams. Are they solely in place at this juncture? And if the answer is yes, then I do think you can make some educated guesses. But like I saw, they've already got a line for the Thanksgiving Day. The Eagles are a 1.5 favorite at Dallas. I can't pull the trigger on a game like that. Who knows what the injury is going to look like by Thanksgiving? And just know this, people. Hopefully you don't get them by week one, but you're going to get them by midseason. So be careful of those games of the year where we feel like, hey, we can really jump out there and get the better of the number. Okay, I'm not going to be betting those. Now, week one, Cowboys in the Meadowlands. I love the Cowboys playing 1.5, Will. I mean,
I don't believe you. No way.
To me, this is, look, Dak doesn't lose to the Giants. Matter of fact, I don't think he had lost until the last game of the regular season last year when he removed himself from the game at halftime in a game they were leading. And that killed me in our VEASAN, in our fantasy draft here, in our futures draft. I was going to win if he led the league in passing. Apparently, he doesn't care about me winning the contest here. But, you know, aside of that, from a game that had no interest for the Cowboys last year as a 7-win team, I just think they're flat out better offensively, the way that they're currently constructed. And they're going to be a lot better. Christian Parker, I'm so excited to see what he can do with this defense. 34 years old, coming over from Philadelphia. And now I think has a guy that's going to see things eye to eye with him in Caleb Downs. I'm expecting a lot out of this rookie. I have not been that excited about a first round defensive player since Micah Parsons. That's how excited I got that day for Micah. That's how I feel about Caleb Downs. Now he's going to be the instant leader of the defense. And up front with Quinnen Williams and with Kenny Clark, they're actually going to be able to stop the run. So if they run that high school wishbone Ole Miss offense here with Jackson Dart and Cam Scadabo, bring it on, boys. I think we'll stop a college offense. If Dart can go back there and drop back on a five-step, seven-step drop and beat the Cowboys, tip my cap. But they run that hairy high school crap, and we're going to beat the crap out of the kid and their fullback running back, and I think it's Cowboys all day, lay the point and a half.
Dave, you're the best, man. Where can we find you?
At D Ross Sports. I like to badger Will on there as well. So don't take yourself too seriously because we don't.
Oh, yeah. I meant to mention that. Keith Hernandez might be my favorite broadcaster. He's great in the booth. He's funny. Loved him on Seinfeld. Look, I know he was a great player. He's before my time. Great defensive player. You can't have a first baseman in the Hall of Fame with 160 homers, 13 homers a year. He drove in 100 runs once. That's a homer take there. He is not a Hall of Famer.
Okay. To quote the great Jack Nicholson from A Few Good Men, take caution in your tone, Commander. I'm a fair guy, but this blank and heat drives me absolutely crazy. He is a Hall of Famer. That is incorrect. The measurables that Keith Hernandez brought, not one, but two World Series titles where he was the best player in the St. Louis Cardinals when they won, and he was the best player on the New York Mets when we won in 1986. Keith Hernandez is absolutely a Hall of Famer. And if we discount the best defensive first baseman of all time, then
Don Mattingly? Why are you bringing up Don Mattingly?
Better than Don Mattingly, better than Donnie Baseball played. If we're going to discount defense, then take out is Ben Wallace in the Basketball Hall of Fame?
The Basketball Hall of Fame is broken. And there are some guys in the Baseball Hall of Fame that don't belong.
Correct.
And if you use that as a bar, it changes things. I understand that.
That's all my, the defense rests.
Dave, you're the best, man. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you, Will.
All right, thank you to Dave Ross. Thank you guys for listening. Rate, review, subscribe, Apple, wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. That actually helps. Appreciate you guys. Be back on Friday. See you then.